ethics of science, I would be going through some concepts and theories and problems relating to philosophical ethics. The idea is to emphasize the importance of some aspects of some concepts, and then also bring about some problems of ethical theories. Now, first of all, rather specific concepts relating to scientific research is the concept of consent. What does it involve? Now, when thinking about giving consent, one could say that if a consent is not given voluntarily, then the consent isn't actually true. So voluntariness is something that is important. Now the question is, how can we be sure that a consent is given voluntarily? The issue here is that whenever people interact with each other, there are all sorts of power relations that might come into play. And in terms of scientific research, the problem, I think, is emphasized by the fact that many people seem to have a lot of respect towards scientists and researchers, and a research subject might be quite readily accepting the view of a scientist as an author, and thereby overcoming one's doubts or questions, or perhaps even giving one's self-determination to certain respect up. So there's interesting research done on these power relations where a scientist may have quite a lot of impact on research subjects. So from this it follows that it is not a trivial matter to trying to ensure that the research subjects give their consents voluntarily. Now, another point relating to consent, in a true consent, the one giving the consent should be informed. Obviously, if one doesn't know all the relevant things relating to the thing that one is consenting to, then it cannot be a true consent. So it is very important that the research subject is given enough information so that the consent can be real. And the third aspect relating to consent relates to competence. Now, competence is a rather difficult concept to define, but one could say that normal adults are considered to be competent by default. However, this doesn't always apply, because even if one is an adult, one could, for one reason or another, not be quite competent in doing a decision. One might have all sorts of mental problems that might affect the full competence. The problem, however, comes to be more problematic when we're looking at non-adults, or more generally people that are not fully competent. Let's say somebody might be of so old that one has lost one's ability to make decisions for him or herself, or one might be so young as to not be able to make good decisions for him or herself, and so forth. And whenever a scientist is in doubt whether one is competent to give consent, there's a scientist must think through how to go forward in that kind of a situation, and it's the responsibility for the scientist to ensure that the consent is real and true in all these senses. Okay, moving on to another important, I think, fundamental concept is the concept of dignity. Dignity is very hard to define. However, it is in many worldviews considered to be a fundamental ethical concept, that is, the value of human being is pretty close to the dignity of a person. That is, we should always dignify, give value to human beings, and the dignity should be always protected. Now, one aspect of dignity is that we should view the research subjects as full human beings, as opposed to just informants or subjects that are objects of our research. That is, we should not objectify humans to be less than persons, or less than humans, or less than valuable human beings. Even though we want to get information from research subjects, we should always remember that they are full human beings, and not undermine their dignity in any way. Autonomy is one thing that is worth mentioning, especially with relation to doing research with human beings. I think that it is a good idea to say that whenever we try to coerce subjects into doing something that they're not normally doing, or try to persuade someone doing something that they would not normally do in their everyday life, that will be a problem for respect of their autonomy. People should always have the possibility to do freely their own decisions, whether to participate and what should they want, and decide what they want to do, be it in a research setting or not. So autonomy is one important concept that deserves attention in a research setting. Okay, so here are some comments on problems relating to concepts on ethics. Next, I would like to go to some basic ideas relating to ethics. that come into play whenever one is doing review on research, or whenever one is evaluating one's actions or plans or whatever. Now, I will start with a philosophical idea or theory that is known as consequentialism, which comes in many forms, and I will not go through all the variations of consequentialism, but rather trying to emphasize some of the basic ideas and problems of consequentialism. Now, there's a way of dividing consequentialist theories into two broad categories. One would be act consequentialism, and the other rule consequentialism. And the basic idea relating to act consequentialism is that the value of an action is determined by the consequences of that action. That is, whatever action one takes, the action's moral value lies in the consequences, in the sense that if the consequences are good, then the act is good, and if the consequences are bad, then the act is bad. This basic idea, initially it does have a value in the sense that it seems to be in accordance of most people's intuition about what should we do. However, it proves to be rather problematic, or there are open questions that need to be answered beyond this basic formulation. Rule consequentialism is a version of consequentialism where one doesn't look into individual actions, but rather rules. And the point is that a rule is valuable ethically if, as a rule, it produces good consequences. That is, following a rule would, generally speaking, produce valuable consequences. Now, going through rather quickly some of the problems relating to consequentialism, some of these would apply to all versions of consequentialism, or most versions of consequentialism, and some only to act consequentialism. Now, whenever we act, there is a possibility of there being unintended or improbable consequences. That is, a chance might intervene. There's something that comes into play that we hadn't planned on. Now, if we don't somehow rule out improbable or unintended consequences, then sometimes actions that would normally produce good consequences would be categorized as bad actions, and it seems that doesn't hold up with our intuitions relating to ethical actions. So one need to take this into account. Now, rule consequentialism is a theory that seems to avoid these problems that are related to chance on particular actions, and some people favor rule consequentialism because of that. Now, a further question. If we look into the consequences and try to value them, one thing is to ask what is in the end a desirable or undesirable consequence. What is that we should be aiming at? Or, to put it in another way, what is good and what is bad? Now, this is a deep philosophical question, and a number of different kinds of answers have been given to this. And one answer would be that we would like to increase happiness and avoid misery. So actions or rules that as a consequence have misery, they should be avoided, and happiness as a consequence is something that should be valued as a good consequence, and those actions and rules should be enforced. Okay, so that's one aspect. However, some people might not be content with this kind of an answer, because happiness might be just as problematic concept as good. That is, what is happiness, or what produces happiness, and so forth. Some people, on the other hand, say that we should aim at pleasure and avoid pain, and that would be an answer. However, some people might say that pleasure as such is not a worthy aim, because pleasure is something passing, and we should go deeper into the nature of happiness, and necessarily avoiding pain and trying to gain pleasures isn't something that makes us happy, but something else. One version of consequentialism is called utilitarianism. That is, consequences that are of utility, those are something that we should aim for. And this answer satisfies some people, but we could further ask what is that is of utility. And it takes us back to the deep question of what is something that we should aim for. Now, even if we get an idea on what is something that is desirable or undesirable, what is something that we should aim for and what we should avoid, there's a problem on measuring or calculating or evaluating consequences. First of all, we should realize that many times we have multiple consequences. How should we balance the positive and negative consequences, and should we always just be content with a positive outcome, or is there some consequences that should be avoided at all costs, or perhaps aimed for at all costs? Should we have different orders of outcomes? That is, should we, for example, let some goods override some other goods? For example, having short-term pain might be tolerable if the outcome is overall more happiness. We can inflict pain, let's say in a dentist appointment to a person, in order to ensure quality of life in a deeper sense. Perhaps we should not try to calculate pains and pleasures in a simple way, but rather put them into different orders of categories, where small gains never never overweight certain other types of harms and so forth. Let's say that we would not want to sacrifice a human life, even if billions of people gain a little pleasure from the action, and so forth. So these questions would be related to calculation and evaluating consequences, multiple consequences, and possibly the different levels of outcomes. Furthermore, one should be asking about the pleasures and pains and goods and bads in terms of whose perspective, because one's gain could be another person's loss, and we should always be wary of whose consequences or whose gains we're talking about. The possible perspectives could be individuals or societies or cultures or something else. This, I think, is a good question. Many times people forget about the perspective and the stakeholders that are involved, and therefore have a biased view on the calculation as to what is the good consequence and what is the bad consequence. Okay, a couple of more questions. How far ahead are we to look for the consequences? One could say that an action might have a consequence comes about years after the deed. However, it could be rather difficult or indeed impossible to make predictions about consequences on certain actions or rules. We should somehow try to control as to how far ahead we would want to look into consequences. Now, in some cases, we have to look at the consequences that might realize themselves in let's say centuries after the deed. For example, if the research involves nuclear material, that is material that radiates harmful radiation, we need to look into the future quite far away. Okay, and finally, relating to the consequence problem, in some cases, it seems that the consequences are not the only determinants of an action or the goodness of an action. Sometimes it might be that a deed results in a consequence that might be praiseworthy, but the intentions that are involved in the action might not be that good. So it could be that the consequentialist point of view will not suffice when looking into the moral value of an action. And one of the aspects that might come handy here is looking into the intentions of the actor, whoever's doing the act. Okay, another aspect that I'd like to bring about at this point is a view on ethics that is about rights and duties. Rights and duties approach could be said to be such that in it a set of rights is seen to determine what we may do, and a set of duties determines what we ought to do. So some ethicists seem to think that when we enumerate the rights of people, when we respect those rights, then we are doing the right thing. And also, if we enumerate the duties of people, and whenever people fulfill their duties, then things are, morally speaking, right. Now, fundamental rights of human beings, they are enumerated in different places. We have universal human rights that are many times seen as the basis of moral action and morality. However, we can ask whether all rights can be enumerated, and if we enumerate a set of rights, would that be enough for moral actions? It could be that more than just following one's duties and respecting rights is needed for moral action. Right, so if a research scientist only looks into rights and duties, it might not be enough from an ethical point of view. Now, finally, in this video, there's another approach in ethics that is worth mentioning. That is the principles approach. Namely, the idea is that a researcher is ethical if the researcher follows a set of principles. The next question would be, okay, what is the set of principles? And a number of principles could be enumerated. For example, one could say that a researcher should always respect subjects, research subjects and their autonomy. We should aim for benevolence and avoid non-malevolence. That is, we should try to be good-willed and avoid any actions that have malevolence as motivating factor. We should be just, that is, respect laws and try to do justice to stakeholders of research and so forth. Other principles would be to aim for accuracy, respect of scientific community and knowledge and the process of science and so forth. Now, the principles approach, I think, is useful in the sense that it can give us guidelines as to what should we do. But as guidelines are sometimes vague, it doesn't always give us precise answers as to what to do in a specific situation or when encountering a dilemma, what should we do in a certain place. And the principles or guidelines approach would give us some general ideas how to do, and we would have to work out the specific outcome or plan or decision using other concepts from ethics and so forth. So here is a few approaches to ethics. These do not cover all the ethical approaches. I will get to those other approaches on another video, but at this point I think that these ethical aspects could be of use when looking into the review questions.